the media. We are meeting this morning to deal with the annual report of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure now. It's got a double barrel now. 2018-2019 financial year. Unqualified with matters, particularly around material impairments of receivables, material misstatements in the APP, on issues around expenditure management and contract management. Expenditure management and contract management are new findings, and so we will deal with all those matters today. Colleagues, we are very thin on time. The House will sit at 2 today, and the hearing is structured into 4 focus areas. So I will request that we dive right into it. I'm going to hand over to Honorable Somyo, who is going to handle the issues of contract management and expenditure management. Babsom, it's 5:30. Can I give you until 10 o'clock? So you will, one question, one response, DG, because we are not making presentations today, but a hearing. But before we start, let's hand over to the minister to introduce a team with the DG so we know who's here. National Treasury, as per usual, if there's something you want to deal with, you just signal to me so that we all humba kahle. So I think next time you must stand at this side so you're in my eyesight, but for today it's fine, so I can bona you properly there when you signal. All right, so I will hand over to you, Minister, to your team, and the DG. So as I said, it's a hearing this morning, so no presentations, and the members have been allocated focus areas, so they will pose one question, one response, and I will manage the time. When we finish with the section, I'll hand over to members, and we tie it down on a section, and we move on to the next one. So as I've said, first off the bat will be contract management and expenditure management. The other announcements about the matters of the last meeting, we will do at the end of the meeting, because we are meeting tomorrow to deal with the ESCOM debt. Right, Honourable Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I just want to thank you for the opportunity. We are the department that's learning, and we are grateful that we're looking forward to advice on how to improve. Just to inform you that this coming week we will be doing a special training of all our senior management on the Public Finance Management Act and also the new AG powers. So we also always seek ways to improve, and we look forward to your input too this morning. I'll ask the DG, Advocate Sam Vukela, just to introduce the team that are here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe they can introduce themselves one by one, so we'll start with the DG.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Sam Vukela, I'm the DG of the department. I'll ask my colleagues from here to introduce themselves and also those who are at the back. Thanks very much.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members, Minister DG and colleagues. My name is Mandla Sithole, Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, Honourable Ministers, DG and fellow colleagues, my name is Lisa Chatuna, Acting Chief Director of Financial Accounting and Reporting.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, all protocol observed. My name is MTR Faisal. I'm the DDG for Governance, Risk and Compliance.
Chairperson, Minister, colleagues, Honourable Members, my name is Basi Khaswani, responsible for key account management in Public Works. Thank you.
At what level are you, DDG, Chief Director?
Apologies, Chair, Chief Director.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Matu Mokhotu,
I'm head of construction.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Erna Wieser, Chief Architect with Public Works and Infrastructure and DDD level.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, the Honourable Members. My name is Vasna Tlabangwane. I'm the Chief Director, Construction Project Management within Public Works. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Raymond Naidu. I'm the Chief Director, Supply Chain Management.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Aaron Mazukbo, Chief Director, Finance.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues, and Minister. My name is Morris Mabinja. I'm Chief Director responsible for Real Estate Management Services.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Setopo Mamutete, standing in for the Chairperson of the Audit Committee.
Okay, in what capacity are you in the establishment? Are you part of the Audit Committee?
Yes, I'm part of the Audit Committee.
My name is Kobus Kuti. I'm the PLO to the
minister. Nice to put a face to the name. We've seen all your correspondence, right? Let's get from National Treasury.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Basani Baker, and I'm the Chief Director for SCM Governance, Monitoring and Compliance at the National Treasury.
Can you speak into the mic?
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Minister, members, and colleagues, my name is Ijendri Nanakan. I'm in the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, National Treasury. I'm a Director, SCM Governance, Monitoring and Compliance.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is George Tembo, Public Finance in the National Treasury.
Okay. All right. Colleagues, I think we are good to go. I think on a special note, we welcome back Honorable Dolashe. We are glad that she has made a speedy recovery, and it's good to have her back. This is Kumbule, ma'am. All right. Honorable Somyo, we've eaten into your time, so can you take us to 10:15?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Member of the Minister and her team. Good morning. We have... looked into the annual report, which has consistently been viewed by the Auditor General by fairly representing the financials, which were somewhat adequate in expression of a view, but with substantive matters. That matter to us. One of those matters, which is glaring, is that a government, the president, is loud in saying that all service providers by the state must be paid on time. Your department it looks like has failed to do so in several instances. Why are you failing the people of South Africa, those who are doing business, some of them from nothing, forced to close because you failed to pay them on prescribed time within the 30-day period? Why is that the case?
All right. Can you respond?
Thanks very much. Let me just, the CFO is going to add a lot of emphasis on this subject. Yes, it's correct that we do have service providers that we normally don't pay within a specific time due to various categories or reasons, some of which will be that there might be disputes between us and the service provider. Some of them will be that they change the banking details in between, which result in the time lapse of paying them on time, because if they register another banking detail, it takes much, much longer. We will attend to specific, but I think since the minister came, she put in place a program when the CFO has got a weekly meetings with all the officials who are responsible for payment to ensure that we deal with this matter. We'll actually even give the numbers as to how far we now in terms of resolving the issue of the backlog of payment within 30 days. Maybe CFO, you can add more details.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Honourable Member, DG, for the
mic
question. On the 30 days payments, maybe it's important also to give history. The year that we are here for, at the beginning of that year, actually, the situation was very bad, to the extent that we had 11,000 invoices that were not paid outside 30 days. But in the same year, then we started a process where we had a VC with all regional offices every Friday, which then resulted to when we closed the year, we're sitting at 511 invoices that were not paid, which were above 30 days. So in terms of that, we believe that we've moved very far. However, one is too many. We agree with the honorable member that our failure to pay invoices within 30 days, especially your small businesses, it affects those small businesses. But also the minister came, we identified the program to the extent that we're giving the minister daily progress. As we speak now, last week when I checked, we were below 200 invoices that were not paid within 30 days. And I must also emphasize that our department, on average per month, we are dealing with about 15,000 invoices across the country. We try our level best to pay all invoices. The reasons why sometimes we don't pay certain invoices, as the DG has articulated, some of the reasons, some of our service providers, they don't do things right, in a sense that you'll find that the invoices are not accurate. We are disputing certain amounts because the nature of work that we do, especially on day-to-day maintenance, we'll argue with a service provider to say the work that they are charging is not, the rates are not acceptable. So sometimes there are those disputes which then lead us not to seek certain invoices. But any invoice that is ready for payment, we pay it within 30 days. Hence, then I thought I must give that background where we come from. But from our side, I think we are progressing very well. And we have a system in place where we track all invoices. We have a central office for each and every office where service providers give invoices. We then put those invoices in the system. And the system tells us each and every day where that invoice is. We even have a system where it tells us to say which invoices, if they are not paid on that particular day, if we don't pay them, then it will fall beyond 30 days. So we track that. We even write to managers for consequence management for those who are not paying invoices within 30 days. Thank you.
You are too general. Too general. In your response, I take the point that you have moved from 11,000 up to about 500. What normally happens is that at times it becomes a choice as to which invoices to pay and which invoices not to pay. We would want to determine this committee in specific terms why the 500 was left out for inability to fully exercise your responsibility to pay service providers in time. This is, we're talking about 30 days. It might stretch to a number of days beyond 30 days, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year. As you put it, that after that audit, you still remain with 200 non-payments. What is it? What is actually driving you to be at that stage?
I think the reasons, as I stated, one of the main reasons will be the banking details. The other reason will be where the rates, there are disputes in terms of the rates. Other reasons, there will be instances where our officials have not certified the invoice for payment. So there will be those different reasons, to be specific. But all invoices that are ready for payment where managers have certified that we can proceed with payments, we do pay. But there are instances where our officials also delay to process certain invoices for payment.
That your officials fail to certify invoices for payment. In that failure, in your follow-up, what is it that you have done so far to ensure that those who are accountable for such are dealt with appropriately? The president has gone public, and this government owes to the fact that service providers who have clearly provided such a service, which we have enjoyed, why are we failing to honor, to pay them? What is it that you have done to such officials?
In instances where it is found that the cause of non-payment is as a result of officials of the department, we take corrective measures towards those officials. I also go to the extent of meeting with service providers myself to listen to their problems and identify where there are problems, and call also those regional managers and sit with them and find out as to where the problem is. So I think I find that an official is the cause of the delay of a payment, we take disciplinary action against those officials immediately. We don't leave it, Honorable Chair.
Just to close up this matter, Chair.
Okay.
Can we get
still great details, though?
Can you get details on the remaining 500 as to what is actually happening? Written explanation on the 500. I think that will somewhat assist us as a matter of follow-up to yourselves, just to close the gray areas in as far as such areas which are not necessarily fulfilling the commitment by government to service providers.
It's on page 220 of the annual report, item 21.2, the payable is not recognized. I think that's the one. We want a breakdown of that, what's on page 220 of your annual report. Because, I mean, my follow-up is, why are officials not certifying invoices? Why is that the case? I think let's zoom, you've broken it down, bank details, disputes, officials. You've put it into three categories. Let's deal with that category. Why are officials not doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Chairperson, I think the question that was also raised by the other member to say what the accounting officer has done In addition to that, the accounting office has issued letters to those officials who failed to pay invoices within 30 days. And linked to that, the 500, that was at the end of the year, this figure fluctuates every month because at the end of the year, that was the figure. In the following month, it changes. Like as I said, as of last week, it was at 200. And there were letters also that the DG has signed, which I think...
How many officials are we dealing with here that have received letters? And at which level are these officials?
The letters that the DG issued were directed to all regional managers, DDGs. Then linked to that, each regional manager also is expected to hold officials accountable within the regional office.
All right. How many have done that?
We have a list that we update monthly.
Right, let's get that list. That's the list we must speak to. I think that's the specifics Bobson was speaking about.
Yeah.
Now you can put it up. The list you're speaking about. No. If you've got it there, speak to it, and then you will transmit it electronically to our administration. So it moved from head office to the regions, and the regions were supposed to do some. Let's get the update. We want to know specifics. Where is this area? Where is this problem taking place? Let's zoom in. So you can go through that list. Were these letters charging people? Were these letters warning people? Were they soliciting information? Or is it a reminder?
Chairperson, the letters were asking questions why the colleagues continue not to pay service providers within 30 days, why they mustn't be charged with financial misconduct.
Nine regions, right?
11 regions.
11 regions. How many responded?
Well, the letter was indicating that before end of this... Was it this month? Or? Yeah, before end of this
when
month.
When did the letter go?
It went, I think, it was routed to DG's office last week.
So we're dealing with the 2018-19?
No, Chairperson. Remember I said...
No, but you see...
Okay.
I'm trying to put in context... We're dealing with the 2018-19. You've categorized it into three. You said bank details, disputes, officials. Right. So this thing of the officials is not new. It's not last week's matter. So then the question becomes, what action was taken before last week? Let me put in context, and I'll hand it over to Wilson. I'm just trying to bring it in. What we are doing here is to ask the question, not kill the patient. We're doing an autopsy. So the future plans are all good because we need to establish why didn't people do what they were supposed to do. So we're going forward looking backwards. So what happened in between the signing off of this and our report until last week? What action was taken? Because you had identified that there's officials who are not doing what they're supposed to do.
Chairperson, we have a list. It's not to say we started last week. You'll recall when we came here last month, we gave you the list where officials were disciplined or they were given letters.
Yeah, we're going to come to that matter because there's another dimension about that list that we want to deal with. So, beg a little. All right, Opsom, over to you.
And in fact, you are dealing with a specific matter. Non-payment of service providers prescribed time. You know your officials, you know what they haven't done, and you are supposed to take particular action. As an accounting officer, what has happened? That's the question you are asking.
Mm.
And to be specific, is that we are saying we are left with 500 plus contracts in terms of service providers that haven't been paid. And in accordance to such, what sort of details are carried in those that you have failed to pay them? Yes, you have done well to pay about 6,000 plus, you see, service providers, but you still fell short by 500.
Let's Absalom, let's go to that list.
Ah, is it a list?
Yeah. Of the 11, how many have responded? Notwithstanding the outer date or deadline, but how many have responded? Or maybe let me put it this way. Which are the problematic regions? Because I'm sure you'd have tabulated. Would you region X? Let's flip the question upside down, so that we can build on what Babu Song was saying.
Chairperson, the key offices, it's Cape Town, but I must say, Cape Town, when we started this program, there were above 7,000 invoices outside 30 days. As of last week, Friday, they were sitting at 49. Which are the invoices that are outside 30 days. And Durban is
100. The invoices we're referring to, we want to know the ones that the officials did not certify. Are those the ones?
Chairperson, I don't have that breakdown now, but the breakdown that I have are the invoices that are over 30 days, per region, per office.
Okay. You can carry on.
Yeah. The next office, which is the highest, is Durban Regional Office, which is 150. Durban Region, they had an issue of the budget, which was approved by ESCO because they overspent. So they will be then clearing those invoices. The reason for them not paying it was because they didn't have a budget. Then the next region is Mabato, with 17 invoices outside 30 days. The other region, it's Nelspruit with one invoice, Bulawayo, 5 invoices, PE, it's 0, Pretoria, I must say Pretoria, they've also did very well, because at the time when we started, there were about 5,000 invoices that were outside 30 days, but as of last week, they were sitting at 12 invoices outside 30 days. Mthatha, 2 invoices, Kimberley, 2 invoices, Head Office, 2 invoices, Bloemfontein, 0. Yeah. So basically, the main regions is Cape Town, Durban, Mabato, and Pretoria.
The risk that now I'm noting is a point that makes reference to accruals, and a danger of spending money which you don't have, going beyond a financial year prescribed. That then becomes another problem which you haven't cited to us. If we follow the Durban office, you say in that year, the year under review, in terms of the audit report, that office went beyond its own budget, and therefore the invoices that couldn't be paid in time are invoices where there was no money for. Just as an example. So it might be that the problem is bigger than what you have cited in as far as the Durban office is concerned. Because here we're talking about a year which has been audited and a flagged problem which itself presents accruals.
Honourable Minister?
Chairperson, with your permission, I just need to seek clarity here. My understanding is that we are dealing with a financial year that started on the 1st of April 2018 and ended on the 31st of March 2019. And some of the explanations that my officials are giving now, it is not within that time frame. It is what's happening right now in the new financial year. Because the system and all the names that we can provide to the committee, Honorable Chair, is not related to the financial year under question, but we can still provide it to you. So I just want us to be clear that we are dealing with that financial year, but the measures that has been put in place is now in the current financial year.
That is the case. But the issue, Minister, is that your corrective measures are a response to the year under review.
Aye.
Yes. So the two are then bound to merge. And that's why I'm saying we are going forward looking backwards. So,
aye.
Yeah. So the where there's a cross-pollination of issues, it will arise. So.
Chair, your officials have gone on record to say, as stated by the Auditor General, the year under review, they were sitting with invoices totaling 11,000 plus. Out of that 11,000 plus, they continued paying and left with 500. So that's what we're dealing with here now, you see, which I think your officials are taking us through those instances. We're not confused.
Yeah, CFO?
Yeah. I think the issue of the budget with Devon office, it's for this year. It's not to say at year end the invoices were not paid because we didn't have a budget.
Okay, then why were they not paid?
We've outlined the reasons. It's just that we don't have that breakdown to say these were because of banking details, these ones were because
CFO,
of...
CFO, you were coming to a hearing. And the minister saying to you, it was 2018-19, so I would imagine that information should have been at the forefront of what you are doing. I mean, no, let's not dlalam chigacho, no. Because the issue is, like I was saying, I was very tight. I referred you to the annual report on page 220. So maybe if you can flip the question, let's get a breakdown of what appears on page 220, there at the top table. What is the status of that breakdown? It was like I'm saying to the ministers that the corrective measures in place would have been in part a response to what happened in the year under review. So in order for you to institute the corrective action, you would have had to done a full assessment and audit and breakdown of what you are dealing with.
Chairperson, let me respond this way. Unfortunately, we don't have that list of 547, but what we have, remember, each and every month
you
we receive...
You don't have it physically, you don't have it on your system. You used to know it's 547, you must have listed it.
No, what I'm trying to say, Chairperson, remember, the payment of invoices happens on a daily basis. We receive invoices, we pay, then at the end of the month we'll have the remaining balance. The following month we deal with those invoices. So those invoices, they've been paid. Hence now we are, as of last week, we're sitting with
220.
Yes, which was 500.
You have got invoices there.
Yes.
I'm saying, where is the breakdown of those invoices? That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to go where you led us.
Okay.
You led us to year under review. So I'm saying, at the end of that financial year, this was your situation. What is the breakdown of that?
Can we provide the list, Chairperson, maybe later?
Define later.
My colleagues will check from the machine. If not, we'll ask the office to send us the list.
We are working in real time now. We are really encouraging FOIR. So if that information must be readily available on the system.
Because that's what's under review. That's your point of departure.
Yeah.
Babson, I'm sorry, I can carry on. I'm just... This may help for any for the sections to follow. If you're going to be providing information, please pull it out now. If there's information that you believe will be able to pull it out now, so we don't have these delays. Because there surely is a breakdown of that. You would have arrived at the end of the financial and said, right, this is our situation. How do we clear those invoices? Let's open it up to colleagues because I think we all right. Honourable Liz, let's just deal with this 30 days thing. All right, Honourable Liz, over to you.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything to add, but if they look at your own report, page 274, you get a breakdown of who the money was owed to, or most of the money was owed to. And 13.8 million was owed to the Department of Defense. So I'm a little surprised that we weren't directed to that page as part of an answer. It's not the complete answer, as you've asked.
True.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sure. I've got nothing more to say.
Let me put this way, because I just think from a practical perspective, you've got measures in place now. Right? That's good. Were those measures associated to what you had at year end?
Yes, Honourable Chair. The measures were associated to those invoices which were outstanding.
Right. That's the plan we want here. When did the measures come in place?
Okay. The measures, Chairperson, started 1st of May 2018. As I indicated that in that year, actually, the situation was extremely bad. The focus area at a time was to make sure that we instilled the culture in the department of paying service providers within 3 days. We had that backlog where even when we started, officials were crying about capacity and all that, but that succeeded because in that year we then ended with 511 invoices. So in terms of the processes, that plan started that year. However, when the minister joined, the issue of consequence management also came in to instill the new culture now to say if you fail to pay invoices within 30 days, you will also face consequence management.
Okay.
So in terms of...
So the measures came in place on the 1st of May, in May.
Right. We intensified,
yes. Okay. What prompted the letters last week? Was that the first set of letters to go to the region?
No, it was not, Chairperson.
All right. So there was an intervention prior to the region. Right. What was the response to that intervention? So when you spoke to the region the first time, what did they cite as the issue?
Well, the issues, Chairperson, when we started, there were different issues which most of them I would regard as they were excuses at a time when we started.
Let's break down those excuses.
Yeah.
Because the excuse then must be followed by consequence management, or it's not a reason.
Yeah. When we started, Chairperson, I think there was no focus on focusing in terms of paying service providers. Colleagues will come and say it's because we don't have capacity, because service providers don't invoice.
Let's formalize that. Where was that? First call me in specific terms. What did Region Bani say? What did head office say and so on? Let's break it down. Because what we are interested in is to go to where the problem is. If you've got one invoice, okay, fine, maybe we can and say focus on that. But Cape Town, Durban, Mabato, were they still problems in May? Were they problems in May?
I think as I said earlier on, Cape Town was worse because of the volume of invoices.
What were the reasons of why Cape Town was so high?
Well, Cape Town, their main problem was capacity, and also they were complaining about service providers not submitting accurate invoices.
Unpaid capacity.
Capacity, I think in Cape Town it was bad, I must say, Chairperson, because at some point they said they had to use cleaners just to send invoices to managers and follow up, and the DG then intervened. They got contract workers to help them. Hence, the situation for Cape Town has completely changed. Compare where we come from.
Okay, let's use Cape Town colleagues as a case.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they are figure living aircon.
Yes.
Maybe take us through the structure of this Cape Town region. So that then when you say capacity, to tell us what you mean. Is it human capacity? Is it financial capacity? What capacity are we talking about here?
It's human capacity in terms of the number of officials.
That was supposed to be there.
How
old was this problem?
Look, there is high turnover, so they had a lot of vacancies as the office. The department had to even prioritize certain positions, so we could not then give Cape Town all the requirements that they wanted in that year. So those were one of the reasons why.
Were these funded posts?
Yes, they were funded positions, but we had to sacrifice for other positions within the region and other regions.
To the detriment of the small businesses?
Let me not put it that way, Chairperson.
That's the result consequence. You had a capacity problem, the posts were funded, the ripple effect was that small businesses were not paid, you prioritized others. The casualty is the small business.
But Chairperson, we responded positively, I must say. I know one is too many, Chairperson, but where we come from, we are not saying, we are proud to say we still have service providers that we don't pay.
Why were the vacancies not filled timeously when they were funded? When these were funded posts? Now maybe DG, you need to come in here because this falls squarely on your shoulders. We see who the Knesset Walum Namlezunga or Noak.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. We do have a process of filling of positions. We develop priorities which are approved based on the finances. And then it takes a bit of time to fill one vacant position in the department because of the processes that are involved. In some areas, they were able to fill those positions quickly. But on the area that is raising the CFO, maybe I must raise this one. the structure of the department is, I can say, is skewed a bit. In the area where there is a need for the necessary capacity, particularly in the area of finances, where they are supposed to pay invoices on time, you'll find we don't have sufficient vacancies. The vacancies might be in other areas, but not in the area where there's a need, particularly when it relates to the payment of invoices. I don't have a specific now, but I think the CFO will actually assist in terms of how many did we fill positions on contract. The contract positions, we're filling them additional to the establishment, which means in the area where...
Let's do this, Dick.
Okay.
How many vacancies did you have at year end in the Cape Town region? See, what I'm saying, I've said, when I use Cape Town as a case that to deal with, which now you're even using cleaners to send invoices. I mean, that should tell you how dire the situation is already and should become a priority area. You've got a region as big as Cape Town, and cleaners are now having to do work that they're not remunerated for. No. Right, Honorable Swartz, and then Honorable Hadebe, and Honorable Mende. Honorable Dulashe, Honorable Machau, and then we'll tie it down on this and move on to the next one.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just worried that the DG, as the overall accounting person, every time is referring to the CFO. And also, when he responded to a question, he said that he meets with service providers. Maybe if they can clarify to us when, if it is once a month, which service providers, because they've counted so many regions. Is he speaking about service providers at head office only, where and how? Because for me, if the DG meets with service providers, there shouldn't be all this to and fro between him and the CFO, because it seems that the one hand does not know what the other hand is doing. That is my take on that one there. But also, if the CFO is saying to us that he does not have a list on the 500 who did when, how, and they say it fluctuates, but you are then saying you've got these strong measures in place as a measuring tool, there is something not right somewhere in terms of your measuring tools, because you do not have the list here, they will send it this and that, but you keep on reiterating that you've got good measures in place, everything is under control. DG, there is something wrong. And if you are coming to a hearing of this nature, of this thick annual report, it seems like you guys didn't even look at your own annual report. I'm becoming very scared, because the things they are speaking, Chair, as hambelani nalo mbhalo lo la le English ela nalo lokuphuma la emlonyeni kuhlukile akuhambisani. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, all right, Honorable Hadab, because CFO, I would want you to, in the interim, whilst these questions come through, we need to be taken through this thing of using of cleaners. It does not sit well with me. Somehow, it's probably the biggest indictment of anything we're going to hear today. Right, Honorable Hadab?
No, thanks, Chair. Well, I'm assigned to property management trading entity. But the issue of failing to comply with a 30-day period also it's applicable.
There.
Yeah, to this. Now, I want to ask a question with regards to the payment within 30 days. Do you have system in place on how do you guys process invoices? Do you only start verifying after the invoice has been submitted? And that's because you are saying at some point there's an argument with the quantity submitted. Don't you have a system? Because I believe for each and every project that you have a client representative or a supervisor that's supposed to quantify and verify the invoice before the submission. Once the invoice is submitted, there are no issues. It appears to me it's either you don't have a client representative or supervisor in all your projects, you wait until the invoice is submitted, then you start to verify. In that case, if that's the case, you are bound to have problems and dispute. Do you have system? And in this meeting that you conduct with service providers, don't you clarify such issues and have a smooth process on how is one expected to submit an invoice? Thank you.
Right. You can just note those, Honorable Mente.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, the CFO earlier indicated a reason why there would be an invoice not paid and made an example of there could probably be a lack of information pertaining to bank accounts or any other thing. And then the DG says there's inconsistencies where their organogram is concerned. Now it begs a question. If a service provider is appointed on appointment contract, there is bank details. But on payment time, there are no bank details. So this problem of not having a proper organogram, which if people who are supposed to be dealing with the 30-day invoices to oversee that process were supposed to be, let me just say, an admin or a financial administrator common to all the region, do we have such people? It looks like all these regions, they are just dealing with one person. They will just delegate to a cleaner or whoever, go look for it. No, I don't see a bank detail, skip. So there is two problems. We don't have a financial person who oversees the contracts of service providers in the regions. They do not have an organogram that's consistent and stable for all the regions. Because if you are going to perform certain duties, you ought to have a stable and consistent organogram. If you need a manager, a supervisor, and a cleaner, it should go like that in all regions. So there is a problem there. Do they have an organogram that speaks to the duties which are required by the department? And therefore, if there is, why are they not filling up those posts?
Okay. Honorable Dolashe, then Honorable Macha will come to you. When we tie down this section, Honorable Van Minen was going to take us through investigations.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for welcoming me. Honorable Chairperson, I'm very worried. A minister with the way the department is responding to this matter. It's like the department is doing service provider a favor. And when you are being done a favor, so you rely to those people who are doing you a favor. If you listen to the DG, he says in most cases our organogram is skewed. We might not have people in the financial side. We might have somewhere. The same time, Chairperson, the President of the Republic pronounced on the matter for one reason. The society is alleging that we are a corrupt government. As such, we don't pay our service providers in time because we want them to pay us back before we pay them. And the department, unfortunately, Minister, with all the responses, is confirming exactly that. If the DG can come and sit here and tell us, the DG, that there are areas where the work is supposed to happen, in fact, there are problems. And he is not giving us the solutions. So confirming what is an allegation. And unfortunately, Chairperson, these officials are very naughty. It's like this has just happened between 2018 and 2019. it has just happened that service providers are not being paid in time. And as a result, we are this department now, which is a new minister, that is doing everything according to the book in trying to assist. The same time, before the new minister came, this problem was already there. And the minister came in and very creatively introduced a system to make sure that this is addressed in time and properly. And the officials are creating an impression that kuyaqala ke manje ukuthi kwenziwe a solution in addressing this. The same time, when the former deputy president, Phumuzile Ncube Blanco, was in the office, that was the general cry, and it was given to her as the deputy president of the republic at the time to be her responsibility to make sure that service providers are being paid according to the timeline. And Chairperson, the 30 days is not a favor. I guess it's law. It's law. So what are we talking about here? What are we talking about? Are we saying, Sir Chairperson, Minister, all these officials, the top management, are undermining the same laws that are governing this country? And if it's the fact, what are we doing about all of them? Because not only Chairperson, it reflects bad to us. They are confirming the allegations that exist at the present moment, that people are not being paid. They are giving service. They give services to the people. When they're supposed to pay, all the excuses are being brought. The bank accounts are changed. The DG can't come and talk to those things, Chairperson, at this level. It's not acceptable, Minister. It's just not acceptable. I guess we need responses that are going to convince us that all the people that are being paid are doing their work.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Chairperson, I don't think we are on it for now. I don't think we are on it. Did she talk about the organogram? What is he doing? What is he paid for? If he can come here to come and complain about an organogram, when he's supposed to be the one that really fix those problems, if he finds time, like Honorable Mende said, to sit with the service provider, what is he saying to those people? If Cape Town people, Honorable Minister, one day are going to have a big toy, if you take people who are not supposed to do that work and expose them to that information, that in fact is not supposed to. People's bank accounts are being known by cleaners. Is that professional? Chairperson, something is wrong here and something must be done, and the minister must tell us what is she going to do, because this one, Chairperson, is more political than administrative. It's highly political and it's killing this government. I guess we don't want to be part of that because we're all committed in fighting corruption.
Sure.
And we want our officials to walk the talk. Thanks, Chair.
Right, Honorable Mahau will be the last one on this one. Then we will hand over to the DG and Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning all. Sorry. Chairperson, my worry is that public works is the government's custodian of all immovable property. So they've got a magnitude role to play. And they are dealing with many service providers. There is no way that this department cannot have standard operating procedures. There is no way. I want to get clarity around that. What are their standard operating procedures? Because they are supposed to have a system whereby the invoice, they're able to check the date of the invoice then to the last chain, so that they cannot experience this huge backlog. Again, you know, Minister, it's a pity that this meeting is called alone by UDG. You can be surprised when you can call all these service providers whose money are outstanding within the department, what you can hear from them. Because you'll find out, for those that have, for those that belong to this 200 and or 511, are those that cannot afford to bribe. That's what you can hear from the service providers. That's a problem cutting across, starting from Department of Public Works at a provincial level up to the national level. That's a problem. with the Department of Public Works. So the earlier the better that there are systems in place to cater that corruption, because in most instances, it is not necessary that there is a lack of human resources system. It's man-made. And the earlier the better you pick up that, so that you are equal to what this committee is whatever
way expecting.
Yeah, is expecting from you. So the earlier the better that you have your standard operating procedures, you are able to trace, have a meeting with the service providers that are not get paid within 30 days, it's where you will be able to get the problem within the department. Thank you very much.
Can I want to ask to this, to tie this down. All the issues that colleagues are raising are valid. In the response, can you juxtapose all the questions to this one fundamental reality? That all of a sudden, in one way or the other, the invoices were now paid in between this finding and the reduction last week. So the question becomes, what are you doing now that you are not doing? Because, have you revised your skewed organogram? Because if you haven't, but you are able to facilitate all these invoices now, it means then, well, that the skewed organogram is less of a factor and probably just about will. I think that's where I am. The colleagues are contextualizing the problem correctly. But now invoices are paid. This massive reduction. That's good. But what magic wand was waved?
Mm.
Because that will tell us then what was not happening, and then it will tell us why people were... Because I'm still expecting a DG. We are going to... Leama cleaners, I tell you now. Your system is vulnerable. Your system is suspect to abuse and corruption, and the integrity of your information is questionable.
Absolutely compromised.
Yeah. Not because we are calling into question the integrity of the cleaners, no. We are not casting any doubt on their persons. All we are saying is they somehow create what... within the office, someone bajika nehlalo and then bese kuthiwa sibanibani. Angifuni ukulisebenzisa because le wrong selifikile. Yeah, ngiliyeke. Kodwa nje, hayi. No. If singamaneseke konke okunye sikukhulumayo.
Yes.
This issue ka 30 days. Kuba even the fluctuations you're speaking about, that's normal in the environment you are in. What should be standard is the process and the procedure to manage ama fluctuation. Because I still maintain, you initially said there's disputes, there's change of bank balance details, and there's officials. I'm still to hear, I want to break down how many, so all these service providers changed their bank details. All these officials are not, no. How long does it take to verify a changed bank detail? Must it take more than 30 days? If that's the case, your systems are weak. So I'm tracing all of what the colleagues have said against the fact that you had a huge number of unpaid invoices. And then you started doing something right. Or maybe let me not do something. You started doing what you were supposed to be doing. So the question is, the individuals who are not doing what they were supposed to be doing, where are they? Because if they are still part of the system, the temptation, or you blink once and you will have a relapse. What I'm saying is that your narrative doesn't make sense in its entirety.
This is
this area, and then we'll hand over.
Yeah, that's to round up here on that point. The Auditor General, Note 34 of the Auditor General's report, page 156. Yeah, Note 34. It indicates clearly that there's been instability in the department. It's establishing the department was impacted by instability resulting from vacancies in some key senior management positions. So this thing, this notion of free for all, have been identified by the Auditor General, by the time of the audit itself, and it's noted as the key matter for substantive outlook of your actual existence, which impact on financials. Whether you talk contract management, you talk the actual day-to-day performance of the department. So the failure of doing so, stabilizing the department, reflects on the results and the outcomes. And you have killed families. You see, families. You have separated families. They got into business expecting that they're going to be paid at a particular defined time in terms of the regulated environment. There's a note which takes into consideration that regulation 8.2.3 by National Treasury stipulates this fact. National Treasury, you were there. You were there. You are there. Where's the guy? What is happening?
Okay. Honorable, just what? 30 seconds, ne?
No, I'll take less than this, Chair. Chair, I just want to understand around the 30 days. Specifically, if you say that service providers would have changed their bank accounts, because all service providers load their information onto CSD. What happens with you as a department in relation to CSD? Because CSD is supposed to be the controlling measuring tool there in terms of bank accounts. So when you just lamely and bluntly and loosely say they changed bank accounts, what happens there? Because you don't accept changes of bank accounts as a department. They must change it on CSD. What happens there?
Okay. Right. That full batch of comments and questions, and then we tie down on this area, and Honorable Fundman, and she's ready to go.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the questions that you posed. In the responses that we're giving, the issue of the organogram, I think we are solving it this one in terms of the contract workers. They are coming handy to assist us. It is for this reason that we close that gap by bringing in contract workers for a shorter period, which sometimes they come to an end. We keep on actually requesting permission to fill positions on contract basis, either for 3 years and so, because it's an area where if we see a gap in a particular unit where we are of the view that the reason is that there's lack of capacity and the structure do not provide, it is allowed that we can actually fill positions additional to the establishment. That's what we do.
So sorry. DG is abusing us, with your respect. Really, he is abusing us. Consistently tell us that cleaners are made to come and do the work, professional work, and he keeps on repeating that, and you are expected to sit quietly and listen.
Maybe let him unpack which contract workers he's referring to.
These are not cleaners.
Okay.
These are professionals in the finance division whose purpose is to capacitate that unit to do the work. It's not the cleaners. The area where the CFO gave reference to cleaners is where there's no one immediately. I think he just gave reference to that we rely sometimes to people who are doing the cleaning work. With respect to...
I think, DG, don't rule like a speed train on this issue of cleaners. I think you need to unpack it properly. How did we arrive at such an arrangement? Because it speaks to a systematic collapse of a unit, if I dare say. I think really clarify it properly so that it's understood. I do not understand how you arrive at a point of relying at cleaners. Because then the question becomes, do these individuals even have a choice when they are sent to do these things or at the mercy of my supervisor? It speaks also to their working conditions. So I think it must be clarified properly. In as much as we did the whole 30 days things, but just you labor relations.
Yeah, I think on this one, I must indicate that in the department, we do have officials at the level of cleaners who are graduates. They may have been appointed at the level of cleaners, but they are graduates. They are qualified to...
Wait. Let him finish.
The system in the department, we have created a system wherein we identify officials who are appointed at the level of cleaning but with the requisite qualification to be posted at certain levels in the department. Posted at certain levels. The dispensation is as follows. We have said, we issued a circular, it is a year or two ago, where we said, let's identify people who are at cleaning level who are qualified. The reason is that we want to ensure that we, out of a pool of clean people who are doing cleaning work, we find a way on how we can post them into various positions which they are qualified to do. We do have that system. Now, I'm actually qualifying what the CFO said. In certain areas, you'll find that somebody is doing cleaning, but is qualified in HR, is qualified in finance, is qualified in other areas.
Do you have an internship program?
The cleaners cannot attend an internship because already they are within.
But you see the bottleneck you are creating. You've got people who've got skills locked in cleaning services, and you've got people who should be cleaning who are not cleaning, and people who are cleaning who should be someone else.
No, but let me explain. The rationale is because they've applied for jobs at cleaning level, with qualifications. They are doing cleaning work.
Why didn't you take them to the contract work that you were speaking about?
No.
You've got vacancies. Funded posts are vacant. You're not filling those. You're filling cleaners with qualified people. I did you.
Qualify this one. I mean, if I can clarify, I think honorable members,
just
I want to clarify this one.
Yes, I've noted you, DG. No, Kubaga, DG. They know when I say Bamba, they know, members know.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The employees who are qualified, who are at the cleaning level, they are permanent in the department. Contract is short term. Now, a person who has appointed permanent as cleaning work, to a large extent, they don't want to go to a temporary work of capacitating a particular unit. When we advertise for
the moonlighting within the department,
I think who
cleans when they're doing the finance work?
Let me further explain, Chair. Moonlighting, as you say, we have created a dispensation in the department that because when positions are advertised, they need requisite experience in certain areas. They are qualified, yes, but they are doing clean work. So we allow them space within the department to say, whilst they are cleaning work, they can actually do their work up to a certain time in the department, and then they get experience within particular units.
So you pay them to clean or to do the finance?
No, we pay them to clean.
And then they do finance work?
Yes, we pay them to clean, but we expose them to experiential work in certain areas.
Did you allow the demo to be panoi?
Okay. Let me not. I thought this one you will support me on this one.
No. 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 DJ.
Clarity.
Wait. Bamba. Wait. Colleagues.
Yeah.
Colleagues.
I think.
Bamba. Whoa. Right. Honorable Swart. Honorable Siwesa, Honorable Hadeb, and then we close this matter.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe, Chair, at some stage, Public Works must give us how many vacancies they have in finance and where within finance and in the regions. And why would you have those open vacancies when they are so crucial to your functioning as a finance division? And then UDG, if Akulingoma, if it was a song, Uyapimba, he's singing the wrong chorus of the song, out of tune. And then the cleaners, you have employed cleaners permanently who have got degrees. So it means that you are closing out ordinarily people who want to apply already because your cleaners have already packed suitcases to go somewhere. This is what you are saying to us, DG. And DG, when you are violating many things because you are abusing the cleaners to do finance work, and we are not sure if they are qualified, as you are saying, those cleaners, but why would a person be so desperate, in fact, who has a degree, a real one, where a dean did go on top of their head to go and clean, even if unemployment is very high and rife? It means that these cleaners going there when you have promised them that after so many months or such a period of time, you are going to employ them. Because I'm saying this, DG, because after you sing the song that is out of tune, you then say you thought we will support you on this year. We can never support you on this year. Permanent cleaners who then handle invoices, who then see people's information, who have not even signed any confidentiality clause. If it means they doing finance things, I don't know CFO, but there is some document that you bind people who work in finance to. But now here in public works, you just zoom in, you start checking people's invoices, no chairperson, wrong language, mea pimbanch.
All right, Honorable Siwesa and then Honorable Hadev.
Thank you, Chair. DJ, I'm a bit disappointed, honestly speaking, because we are talking about something crucial here. We are talking about handling invoices. The CFO starts by saying cleaners, which is exploitation. So we are taking somebody who's getting, let's say, 12,000 per month to do a job of 35,000 per month. And then we need to say all is well. And those invoices will never get anything right because these people work on their own conditions because they know they signed a contract to say, I'm here to mop the floors. So you can't even hold them accountable for anything because you are asking a favor from them as to come and do this because we know you've got the qualifications. And we also know, because I sit in the Committee of Public Works, that you guys have a lot of vacancies. Scanty, you've got cleaners who've got qualifications. And yet you are not roping those cleaners in to close and then get people who don't even have metric to come and mop the floors. So the department will never move from where it is right now if we are still going, because this is pure exploitation. It doesn't need any other word. It's pure exploitation of people that are desperate to earn a living and put bread on their table. So I ask myself, are they approached by, if you don't do this, you are going to lose this job. So you better come to site and do these books for us, or else we know that you are on contract to mop the floors and clean the toilets. So I'm very disappointed that we've got people with honors and masters and whatever, mopping floors, and yet the department has so many vacancies that can be filled in, but people are there. It brings me back to the issue of the EPWP, which means some of those people are hired under EPWP to mop the floors, whereas they've got qualifications to fill in those vacancies. So if the department was very serious, we could have long filled in those open spaces, if the department was serious. But it simply means that the department is not serious, because somebody with a belt or something is moving. Every day you are seeing this person walking up and down. That's pure exploitation, and it's very disappointing. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Hart, I will be the last one on this one, and then we are going to move on. I will just, our colleagues, I want to make a proposal when it's done on the issue of rotated days, and then Honorable Van Menen can come in. Right, Honorable Hart,
so, Chair, we don't have an issue in terms of appropriate skills. Our people, the masses of our people, are misplaced. They are employed as cleaners, yet they've got the relevant qualifications. And the AG stated clear in this report 157 that you are impacted by instability resulting from vacancy in some key senior management position. And our people are still trapped in sweeping the floors. You don't want to fill those positions. Whenever you want to use them for your benefit, you take them as skills transfer, yet you don't compensate them. They remain getting a salary of being a cleaner. And you want us to applaud that as being progressive. The real reason why you don't employ them in those positions is that you want to continue doing your shenanigans. And when each hits the fence, you say, no, they were contracted cleaners who did this.
Yeah.
Why, Madam Mayor, with your background, we're coming a long way, a decade of service between the two of us. How do you allow such thing to happen?
Yeah.
It can't be. No.
Jelle, not
right. DG, you are saying we should applaud you for taking cleaners and continuously paying them the salary of being a cleaner to do the financial work. Is that what you want us to applaud you for? Did I hear you correctly?
Right.
I thought you were going to say, no, for that few months, 3 months, I compensate them and pay them the salary accordingly. That would have been progressive, but you are saying no.
Okay. All right, here's what we're going to do. Because there are a number of issues that arise out of this 30-day reality. One, it's good progress has been made and the number of invoices has been reduced. But along the way, certain things that should not have happened have happened. So we will park this issue on the 30 days payment and then proceed to other matters. We will find a way to tie this one down. DG, there is absolutely nothing wrong with upskilling our people. That we fully welcome. If somebody is in the establishment and you have got bursary schemes and you're working with the theaters and you are upskilling them, that is all good and well. There's certainly no, there's no question about that. The issue is, you've got a high vacancy rate, you've got instability, you've got funded posts that are not filled. Yet you have got people in your establishment locked in cleaning positions. And these people ordinarily then should not be there. Their upward mobility is stunted. And people who should, maybe not should, but people who need the jobs of cleaning are unable to take them because you've got officialized moonlighting in the department to say, it's fine, continue cleaning, but do that work for free. No. So your noble intention has been collapsed by poor execution. It's fell flat on its face.
So I think you need to go back, revisit your model, revisit your implementation, so that the impression is not left that we here are against upward mobility. But what we are pro is people being remunerated for the work they are doing. Because I'm not sure whether the 8 years arrived. I'm not even sure whether there's any level of, you know, credibility or accountability we can ascribe to the individuals who are claiming but doing this work. I'm not sure who's held responsible when things go south. The grey areas are closer to the side of dark. No. Let's not implement right things wrongly. So we will want a briefing note on this concept within the next 7 days and how you actually implemented it, which will include the number of people who are in this arrangement, because I doubt that is a wholesale reality in the department. No. Can't be. Because our expectation is that if those people are qualified, they should be placed in positions higher than where they are now. You've got vacancies. So, and it just cannot be right that people will clean but then do other work, because who does the cleaning work when they are busy with the finance work? I can assure you, DG, from where I'm seated, the issue you're pointing to is a minimal percent compared to the bigger problem that you have. So I don't want this to sidetrack us from the broader systemic issues. You've cited the issue of the organogram. You've cited the issue of the vacancies, which even the AG has pointed to. And it still remains. Where are the consequences for people who did not do what they were supposed to do, who are not certifying invoices? The issue of the verification of the bank accounts. Because, So I'm not taking any further responses on this. We're just going to and get that in next week, and we'll look at it, and then we'll take it from there. So what I really don't want is for the committee to be seen to be anti-progress. No, we are just saying, let's not abuse our people. And quite frankly, if somebody is saying, no, I don't want a permanent position, but I'm prepared to do the job, I'm prepared to remain in a cleaning position, but I will do the strenuous work of finance. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't even think Lentu Moonlight. It's something else. Right, Minister, I'll give you to you to tie it down.
Chairperson, I will thank you. I will just sum up and try and move us forward. The new departure point, Chairperson, there is absolutely no excuse for not implementing the law. If the law says you must pay within 30 days, that must happen. So that is the new approach. But one key point that the committee raised, Chairperson, is about the vacancies in the department. What has led to that was that although we had funded vacancies in the department, in the staff structure, those vacancies were never filled. Instead, they were filled with contract workers that became additional to the staff structure, and therefore all of the vacancies. We dealt with the additional to the staff structure contract workers. All of those contracts came to an end on the 31st of December 2019. But we have to go back and find out who gave the instruction for cleaners in the office of Cape Town to do that work. And we have to come back to the committee with a written report. I will launch a full investigation to understand exactly when did this happen, who gave the instruction, and why did we exploit cleaners to do that work. Lastly, Chairperson, I think what the committee is raising very profoundly here today is the issue of a capable state and an ethical state.
Mm.
That is one of the key priorities of the sixth administration. And whatever corrections we're doing it to try and build a capable and ethical state. But you cannot build it unless you've got the systems in place. So we are busy putting systems in place that can detect the 30-day payments, and we're tracking it on a daily basis. We, on a weekly basis, on a Friday, I will release on social media the status of the 30-day payment to show that we are really trying to deal with it. Lastly, Chairperson, what the cause of creating all of these invoices by the department is also a system failure. Because you cannot create a tender or a request for proposal to react to any request that we get for maintenance. And therefore, generating hundreds of invoices with different contractors, we've now changed that, where they have to have term contracts, where you've got term contractors on our books that you can activate when there's a problem. Because therein also lies the corruption. Because many of these service providers, some of them were getting paid without even delivering the services. Or if they deliver the services, then it is not a good quality of services. And part of it is in what we call this prestige department.
That parole arrangement you have.
Yeah, it is far, far from prestige, but that is what the name is called. And Chairperson, I can commit that we need to, in our quarterly reports to Parliament, we need to submit all on our 30-day payment because it's compulsory. I also have changed the key performance areas of the senior managers because they have the KPI to pay 80% of the 30-day period. I said, no, you can't qualify the law. The law says 100%. So we've changed the KPIs of all the senior managers, and then, of course, we've also introduced consequences and contract managers. But we hear the concerns of the committee, and we commit to work with you to find permanent solutions. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thanks, Minister. Right, Honourable Van Minen, it's 5 past. Can I give you 30 minutes? So 25 to 12 to take us through in investigations. Right, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think systems is very much the word I really want to focus on, because that's what I'm interested in, is the actual systems with the investigations and how they're triggered and how they progress. They're very sparse details, but what I want to start with is understanding the relationship between the SIU and the anti-corruption unit, the ACU. What happens essentially when the SIU investigates and finds evidence? Does it hand it over to the department? How does that whole process work? Because also if I look at the stats and the figures, there seems to be quite a gulf between what gets reported and recommended and what actually is action. So if someone can please just explain how that process works as we start off.
Right. Can you get a response to that? Are you processing your...
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member, through the Chairperson. Chairperson, what the SIU does is they make recommendations to the department where they require our involvement. They also deal with the outcome of investigations by themselves. They refer matters directly to the NPA and also to the police for further investigation. They also take matters to the civil courts for recovery where required. It's mainly for the purpose of effecting systemic recommendations and corrections in the department that they refer to us. And they also refer to us affidavits by investigators to use as a basis for initiating disciplinary proceedings against specific members of staff. And we refer that to our labor relations unit, which then effects the necessary recommendation to charge a particular individual with specific transgressions. We then collaborate with the SIU, because the SIU investigator would become the prime witness in the disciplinary hearings. So that's how it works with respect to disciplinary proceedings.
Okay, Karen.
What I'm specifically looking at is the actual actioning of the recommendations. Because if I look at these reports, there are a lot of cases where there are recommendations made. I'd want to find out how it is actually received by the department and processed. Is there a discretion? Is it something that happens automatically? Just talk me through that process.
Ma'am, I wouldn't say it's discretionary. We find it an obligation to charge an individual where the SIU points out transgression of the code of conduct or any particular rule or legislation. We carry out the disciplinary proceedings as a matter of obligation. There's no discretion involved. So we follow it through. The letter.
Thank you. Now, I want to start moving on to very specific issues. The state funerals for the 7.7 million rand, was it the management fee? How did this actually transpire? How did it fall through the systems that were supposed to be there to actually prevent that happening? Because one thing I've picked up is there do appear to be systems introduced recently to try to ameliorate that kind of thing happening. So what I did battle with the issue of the state funerals is there are no dates concerned. It states what happened, but it doesn't give any kind of time frame. So just talk as to how that actually occurred, how the systems failed, and how it was eventually picked up.
Honourable Member. First of all, with respect to how did it happen, I would say that how it happened is that there have been negligence on the part of the individuals and the management involved in overseeing the funerals in question. The investigation concluded that the officials who approved the invoices did not conduct the necessary diligence and oversight and calculations to ensure that we were charged for services actually rendered, that the department received those goods and services, and most importantly, that the prices was in accordance with the tender that was awarded to the company concerned. So the level of diligence and the level of application from a financial and accounting point of view was lacking, where the service provider presented invoices and the department and the officials involved would then have approved these invoices without applying the necessary application to ensure that it was valid and accurate. That is the single reason for the overpayments made by the department, which then resulted in what would then be classified as fruitless expenditure and also irregular expenditure, especially irregular in the context of the fact that some goods were delivered but they were not part of the original tender pricing schedule. And it also appears that there was a certain concealment of further commissions in the invoices, and that was not detected where it ought to have been detected. There was an inflation of invoices by at least 15% beyond the invoice price, and that is a result of a negligence on the part of the officials concerned. That is what the investigation concluded.
Now, what concerns me, I mean, we aren't talking about one or two layers failing. This is systematic failure. And, I mean, if it's happening in one particular case, it's probably happening department-wide. How broad was the investigation into this? And in terms of accountability, you're saying that people failed, it fell through the cracks. Mm-hmm. Has there been a broader investigation into the entire system? And in terms of this specific investigation, how many layers of oversight failed, and what kind of consequences are there for that?
Chairperson, through you, I see two questions there. The first question relates to how broad this and the prevalence of this particular problem is. And what we did was we conducted some kind of high-level review of other funerals that took place before and after the three that were investigated, and it was found that the level of expenditure was not on the same quantum as these three in particular. These three seemed to exceed the norm. The others were essentially more within the level of expectation of a cost of a funeral. So the problems don't appear to have been widespread and was more concentrated to these three funerals that raised the alarm and the red flags. And then with respect to consequence management, before I go to consequence management, perhaps I should extend one thing. The procurement process was fundamentally flawed. And given the fact that the procurement process was fundamentally flawed, that created a platform for major transgressions. Because what you have is it's very difficult to award a tender for an event yet to occur. So you need to take a different approach, and the right approaches and strategies or procurement strategies were not effected in the first place, and that obviously created the platform for the transgressions that followed in due course. So to answer the second part of the question with respect to consequence management, the investigation report was approved by the minister, and the minister has approved that at least four individuals in the department be charged for various transgressions of the code of conduct and of the PFMA and for failing to apply due diligence and causing the department to incur irregular expenditure as well as fruitless expenditure. There's also every possibility that we'll apply our minds, and the AG has also raised it with us, to how we can work together to apply the amendments in the Public Audit Act and to recover possibly some of these amounts. We also have consequences in the civil courts where we're seeking to recover, where there are clear terms of recovery, the overpayments and the 15% inflation of invoices, which is clear-cut misrepresentation from the supplier concerned. So we are pursuing consequence management in that respect, and we're also considering the possibility of criminal misrepresentation and fraud as a result of those invoices concealing payments that were not due by the state. So from a criminal, civil, and disciplinary point of view, the consequence management is unfolding at this moment in time.
When did the minister approve the report?
The minister approved the report over December 2019. This is my recollection, Chairperson. Yes.
When you say the procurement was fatally flawed, can you just expand on that? I mean, how do you mean, was it the concept, was it the planning, in what way was it flawed, and what procedures are you putting into place to ensure that doesn't happen in future?
Chairperson, the procurement process, one would say the procurement strategy was fundamentally flawed. If one hosts an event of the nature of a funeral or any other kind of event, that one cannot then foresee the quantum of expenditure, and one cannot foresee the nature of equipment and services that may be required for a future event. It might have been more feasible to put out a tender to events management companies to pre-qualify them. And then when you have a funeral, is to invite three to have a look at your needs, which are approved by a ministerial committee. When a funeral is declared an official or state funeral, the ministerial committee will prescribe the requirements and the needs, and the three companies can quote on those needs. But what happened was companies quoted in a vacuum, and that vacuum didn't allow for proper assessment of requirements and negotiation with the companies to effect the procurement strategy that resulted in what one could call effective value for money to the state. In fact, there were certain items like draping, for example, at 5,000 rand a square meter, and some other excessive items of expenditure. And there are many items that you would need in a funeral which was not quoted for. So inevitably, that you would ask for these things, but they were not in the tender pricing schedule. As a consequence, you'd incur irregular expenditure. So from that point of view, the tender process was fundamentally flawed.
I mean, going forward, official funerals and state funerals are not particularly unusual events. I mean, we do see a number of these every year. What procedures have been put in place to ensure that this is not covered in future and we don't see a repetition of this?
Chairperson, first of all, that particular contract has expired, the one in place. It expires over. So from a SCM point of view, we're going out to establish a new panel of service providers to support state events. And we've made recommendations to the SCM as well as the prestige officials as a result of this investigation. So they will look at the new procurement strategy and look to implement a strategy that takes into account some of the weaknesses we identified in the earlier strategy that led to our current impasse. So we have an opportunity to start afresh, and we'll be imbuing all of our recommendations into the new procurement process when we establish a new panel, and our investigators will then make representations to our prestige unit as well as the SCM branch to ensure that the process is essentially constitutes value for money and it cannot be abused when we have a funeral or any other state event, because the current process was ripe for abuse. In fact, the level of negligence is mind-boggling. And in fact, what it does is it causes you to question whether it's negligence or whether it's deliberate. You know, it's that bad. The level of incompetence and negligence is staggering and resulting in material losses to the state. So we have the opportunity to start afresh, and that process is now underway, early 2020, to develop and establish a panel of service providers to support state events. So it will all be taken into account.
And what kind of vetting processes are there in place dealing with the members of the panel to ensure that you don't see a repetition of negligence or deliberate inflation, essentially what can be determined as fraud? How would you be sure that those participants are not essentially going to be repeating that?
Chairperson, through you, first of all, the companies that tender for prestige services, goods and services, they are all vetted by the State Security Agency. So we ensure that they pass the vetting process for suppliers, which is a different category of vetting to individuals and officials of the state. So that vetting takes place. But what I also want to say is that our own systems failed us in that the service provider manipulated the department, and the service provider delivered goods that were not ordered. The service provider charged us at rates and that were exceeded what we agreed upon, and it's up to the department to have systems in place and to detect these variations. And the department did, in fact, have systems in place. And an official can only sign off an invoice and effect payment if goods were received, and the individual is required to certify that, in fact, goods were received and the prices charged are in accordance with what was agreed upon in during the procurement process. It's the individuals that failed the organization, and then the consequence management will have to follow. So that is where the problem has been isolated to. It's the individuals failed the system. The system was there.
So these invoices were paid within the 30 days?
Chairperson, that is correct. In fact, Chairperson, I understand that it was paid well before 30 days expired, well before 30 days expired.
It goes to the point Honorable Makhau then said that the non-payment of invoices is in large part can be attributed to the small man in the street who does not have the financial muscle to pay the bribe and to give the kickback, because they are not part of the well-coordinated syndicate within the system which processes invoices timelessly for others and frustrates others. And so the issue again about the non-certification of invoices comes into question, that it's not a deficiency, nor is it negligence, it's deliberate. So I just wanted to make that point, because it comes in very sharply, Uti. Oh, here people were able to say, to confirm their banking details. There's no problem there. There's no dispute about the pricing, nor is there an issue about certification. So just the contrast. I think looking at it as part of the problem you have, this particular one fits the narrative firmly. Right, Honorable Van Meenen?
Thank you. I'm just concerned when you say that the systems are in place but the system has failed. How can you be sure that isn't going to happen in future? I mean, if we look, there's another one here with the Johannesburg Regional Office with procurement irregularities, where there was an issue with Manganwe Project Enterprises, where you've got a government employee again, there are all sorts of gateways that seem to have failed. Now, how do we see this occurring again and again and again? And what is the system, what is the department doing to ensure that doesn't continue? Because it's good and well to say the system failed us, but if this continues to happen, there's another one with CMAX in Pretoria, what is this, the department actually doing to make sure that you're ridding the department of people who are negligent or somehow involved, to actually ensure that taxpayers' money is being used correctly and isn't being abused?
Chairperson, just before I answer, I want to agree with the comment you made about the deliberate nature of these payments. We had an experience in our Pretoria office where a service provider brought it to our attention that a staff member in finance requested 100,000 for every million outstanding, and there were 6 million outstanding. So we got the service provider to agree to make the payment, and we worked with our OX to trap the staff member in Pretoria. And they handed over 50,000 and the person accepted it. So this individual was subject to disciplinary hearings and was dismissed. But the case is still with the police. So it's still in the criminal justice system, but we've dealt with it internally. So you do have this. So, Honourable Member, with respect to the consequence management in this case, what one can say without any doubt is that it's not the system that failed us. We failed ourselves. So the system is there to guide us and to provide procedures and provide controls to ensure that we pay what is due and no more. But it's up to us to apply the system, and we fail to apply the system. So consequence management is what the response will be. And consequence management should be seen to be carried out to deter others from overriding the system. This was essentially system override in terms of one's interpretation of the outcome of the investigation. The system is there. The system is clear to understand. And the system must be applied. So the human failure is the human element. With respect to CMAX, the CMAX is another basket case for us because CMAX started out as a 100 million project and it exceeded 100%, where a service provider was paid 90% of the project value and then dismissed, only for us to award it to a second service provider for more than the initial award. This talks to serious negligence and system override. And the disappointing outcome has been that the CMAX hearing resulted in a suspension without pay for the relevant project managers. And yet the organization lost almost 150 million. So we also need to look at our disciplinary systems. And we are currently applying our minds to how it works and whether it's feasible to establish some kind of system where certain transgressions warrant a minimum sanction. Because here you have an example of 150 million loss that was responded to a consequence management process through a suspension without pay sanction. So our system needs to be looked at. But what you will find regularly, that the systems are there, and the PFME is there, the treasury regulations are there, and every invoice is stamped before a payment is made, to ensure that services were rendered and that goods were received and that the prices have been checked to be accurate. It's the human element, and the system override is very prevalent. And there are key questions on why that would take place. We don't always prove corruption, but there's clear negligence on the part of the individual. And consequence management is the response from our side, and we need to take a hard line in that particular respect, and we are in fact doing so. Where we can, and we're looking at the other elements, like I say, at minimum sanctions as well.
Okay. It's good and well to say that the system gets overridden as the human element. What I'm trying to get to is, what is the department doing to ensure that that does not recur? I mean, I've noticed the very very disproportionate sanctioning. So somebody gets a written warning or they get suspended for 3 months without pay. It's just completely disproportionate to the amount of money that is being lost. And we're talking about very, very large amounts. Not to mention, you know, at what point does wholesale negligence actually become criminal? At what point does one actually go to the criminal courts to try to get a criminal sanction? So what is the department doing to ensure this human factor is actually dealt with and one doesn't continue to see what's essentially a parallel system? So you have a system that's essentially being ignored. You have the human factor, which is then doing, from what I can gather, enormous damage to the entire department. And yet there doesn't seem to be any wholesale dealing with it. So essentially you've got a parallel system developed. And how do you regulate that, and how do you ensure there actually is proper prosecution and sanction when required?
I think that question really should be responded to by the DG. I just think it speaks to the overall state of health of process within the department. DG?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. We also had a discussion about this in the audit committee to say we should bring in place measures to address this question. We are aware that we are a member of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council where issues relating to these matters are discussed. We also had agreed that we should actually mandate our labor relations who sit there and represent the department where policy matters of this nature are changed to, in our department, to mention areas where we believe this can be serious matters that must be taken seriously to say once there is this transgression on this area, it should amount to this offense. I think it's one approach that can strengthen our resolve on this matter. Once that is agreed upon, we implement, because we rely on the PSCBC resolutions that regulate matters of misconduct. I think it's a matter that we're actually going to take forward to ensure that it is addressed. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Minister, you can take notes, and at the end of each section, you will then be afforded an opportunity to make comment. Honourable Van Minen?
I think what concerns me is once hearing that there are problems, that steps are being taken to deal with it. But that seems to be an unending process. Mm. What I'm interested in is actual concrete resolutions and decisions and prosecutions and sanctions. Because it's good and well to say we will do this, we will do that. What is currently being done? For example, how many criminal prosecutions have there in fact been over the last, let's say, two financial years? How does that compare to the number of charges that have actually been brought? And then the other issue that one sees in a lot of departments where prosecutions or sanctions or disciplinaries are delayed pending somebody getting further particulars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until such point as they actually retire or they move on to a different department. If somebody does resign and move to a different department, is there a consequence for that? Because one does, unfortunately, see a tendency to recycle officials through various departments, and there actually is no consequence management, and there is no sanction for bad behavior.
Timelines.
Thanks very much. Fortunately, in that particular area, government has taken the decision that the recycling of offenders is no longer going to take place. If a person resigns here and goes to another area, that process pursues as if he or she was still here. So I think that one has been addressed. In terms of criminal cases that have been reported, my colleague will address that one.
Right.
Chairperson, through you, I'm not sure if I should go through it and give an overview of what we've done as a department.
How many cases have you referred?
In the last 4 years, we've covered a backlog from 2013-14 where we had cases in the draw, not investigated. We covered all of that, and to date, up to now, February 2020, we've done 293 investigations through our anti-corruption units. 256 of those have been finalized, and we referred 19 to the SIU. The outcomes have been that we've made 325 disciplinary recommendations to labor relations to charge, and of those 288 have been finalized,
As a consequence, we've had 13 dismissals, one demotion, 40 final written warnings, 60 written warnings, 21 suspensions without pay, 11 verbal warnings, 24 retirements and resignations. Those would often be converted into a dismissal. Officials often resign under these categories, and 112 were not charged, or the charge was not pursued because of the lack of evidence. Employee put up a fight, and on a legal basis, we had to withdraw, and 37 are still pending. Those hearings are currently unfolding. Then we've also made 46 referrals to the SEPs, and I used the example earlier on where we dismissed an employee for what constitutes corruption. But the SEPs have not yet taken it to court, and it's been quite a while. So we've had 46 of those referrals. And then, Chairperson, through you, we've also had the SIU. We work with the SIU, and our ministers make referrals to the Minister of Justice. So their proclamations of the President, they emanate from our own anti-corruption initiatives. And as a result, we've had 5 proclamations leading to 2,325 investigations. It seems excessive, but of those 2,000 were leases. We investigated 2,000 leases, all our leases, and as a consequence, we've had 79 disciplinary hearings as a result of SIU investigations, 8 resignations, 3 verbal warnings, 14 written warnings, 20 final written warnings, and 15 suspensions without pay. And we also had 10 cases where we couldn't prove the misconduct, and we had 8 dismissals. So, and one person was found not guilty. We also have 1.3 billion rand, which we are seeking to recover either through the courts or directly from landlords. And our CFO deducts amounts from landlords where we find they have charged us for space we did not rent or rates per square meter which are in excess of the lease agreement. Those amounts alone are significant. They may amount to 300 million rand. Of the 1.3 billion in total. The others are before the courts, the several courts, and the SIU will also have a tribunal soon where all SIU investigations are presented to their own tribunal, and the judges have all been appointed that their tribunal must just start working, and our cases will appear there. So it's more than a billion rand we want to recover through the court.
How much have you recovered so far?
So far, Chairperson, according to our records here, civil action on the leases, we've recovered 129 million on 41 leases, 129 million, yes. So that's there, and then also criminal referrals, Chairperson, through you, we've made through the SIU 72 referrals to the NPA, and the NPA are now under pressure from the SIU and the Minister to process. As the Minister communicated with the SIU in December to explain that the rate of consummation of matters before the court and in criminal investigations is not good enough. So the SIU have it all to answer with respect to the pace with which they're carrying out their work. There are 72 criminal matters which are yet to appear before the court, and all of them obviously have merit. So our anti-corruption strategy and our consequence management strategy is very strong, but I think the human element is still very significant, that certain individuals bypass the system and we still have a lot of corruption because our organization is very susceptible to corruption, being a procurement organization in construction and leasing. So we have a lot of work to do, and I think our systems have room for improvement, and we are also our consequence management. We must be seen to set an example, and I believe that we are on the right track there, Chairperson, for you.
Can that document that you are reading there be handed over to Mrs. Nkabinda as well? Because we are going to be scheduling to meet with the law enforcement agencies so we can follow up on those. There's quite a long list from other departments as well. So if that can be handed over so that we've got it as part of our records. Mr. Scabinda is right there at the back. Dombi. I think that's the... All right, Nul van Minen. All right. Colleagues, we're going to take just a quick one. Your vetting, Cabinet Resolution 2014, vetting of people in supply chain, and of course on page 82, I think, page 82. the issue of vetting. So how far are you with that? DG?
Thank you very much. We are complying with this decision of vetting of officials in the supply chain. We do have an internal unit that is responsible for the vetting, which is working closely with the state security, whose responsibility is to ensure that from time to time, officials who are appointed to undertake work in the supply chain are vetted. We also do the vetting of companies. I will ask my colleague in the supply chain to relate to areas where the number of officials have been vetted already in our department.
Right, can we get that quickly, please?
Yeah.
Honorable Chair, members, I can confirm, Chair, that we've received a report back from our security services that says all officials at SCM in the head office, approximately 155, have been vetted for compliance with SCM related matters, and they have all been found to be clear. There were no adverse findings reported on them. In respect of vetting of service providers, as alluded to earlier by my colleague, we security clear all service providers by sending through an application to State Security Agency, who then security clears service providers for us and submits then the report to our security services as well as to the SCM unit, because these become fundamental documents prior to the awarding of a tender.
All right, and in the regions, you spoke about head office?
In the regions as well, Chair. I don't have the exact numbers. I can commit to getting those numbers and submitting to, but all of the SCM have been vetted. Sorry, Chair.
Can that be pulled out? It should be already available and submitted to Mrs.
I will certainly do that now, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Liz?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The with regard to the delinquent funerals for very important people, you said four people had been referred for discipline. Who are they?
A response, please. Mike?
Chairperson?
Thank you very much.
Chairman, while we're waiting, may I just ask one last question? With regard to the Kimberley Mental Hospital, was that one of your projects? It started in 2001, budget then of 290 million. 2020, it's recently opened, but is half utilized. Final cost, can you tell us what the final cost is? Reputed to be in excess of 2 billion rand. If it is one of your projects, how did that all happen?
Let's get a response. The Kimberley Hospital, Mental Hospital. Can you get a response to that while those names are being pulled out? It's four names, really. It shouldn't take long. Are they ready? Can you get your mic there whilst you are...
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. It's Mrs. Arala, Mr. Haswane, and Mr. Sazona.
That's three. What levels are these people? Where are they stationed?
Chairperson, the latter two are chief directors. The last two are chief directors.
At which levels? Where? Head office or...
Head office, prestige.
All right. And then the first, the former, so the latter are chief director, former. Colleagues, you see what you must not do is when it comes to names, we don't like this mlaba-laba game. It happens all the time. We now don't know. We want the names. It's just
See, we had one department here. They went back for the whole weekend and compiled the list and came back. So don't tempt us to send you back and come back. But we want to.
Thank you, Chairperson. The other two are at a project manager level. It's Ms. Rarazala and Ms. Mabuela. They were project managers. They managed the project in terms of that.
Good. Thank you. Honorable Lisa, follow up on that. All right, let's get a response on the Kimberley Hospital matter. I would like a copy of that report handed over to Mrs. Kabinda as well that you are reading from.
The hospitals are not in our radar.
Okay.
But I will want the DDG responsible for projects to respond to this one.
All right, DDG.
Good morning, Chair. The question on the Kimberley Hospital has been noted. I have gone through my system and I do not locate that particular project on the system. Chair, if I can also go back and double check with the Kimberley Regional Office, because what happens normally, the hospitals are under the jurisdiction of provincial government.
No, that's fine. It's quarter to 12.
Yes.
You've gotten an hour to consult with them, and you will come back to us within the hour. So you've got time to do that. So you can feed the response you get into the record. So you can go and solicit that information, no problem. Right? Okay, you will come back when the response comes, right, Honorable Siwisa?
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'll be out of line, but
I'll let you know if you are, don't worry.
I'm looking at this big A5 paper. And I have a few questions based on what I went through the deviation report. Because
Marge, I think Honorable Mente will be taking us through that in a later section.
So all right, thank you.
If she doesn't, you can fill the question then if your area is not covered. So she will be taking us through that. So you're not out of order, you're just early. So we will come to that. Right, colleagues? Anything else in this section? Right, so the four persons that have been charged, what's the timeline to that? Because we don't want these cases to go cold. Did you say Shimnyang Uvulim? Aning Valelewana Lapo, thanks, AG. Right, what is the timeline for these cases? Minister signed off in December, Jan. It's now Feb. How far are we with that?
Yes, Chairperson, we were advised to look at a few other matters, associated matters, for example, the procurement process as well before we charge. We hope to start charging towards the end of this month to ensure that we take all the transgressions into account. Because once we...
Advised by?
We're advised by our own legal people and labor relations people in the department to prepare properly so that we charge once and we don't come back and add different transgressions. We'll be clarifying these matters, and by the end of the month, we'll commence with the...
Are these people still at work?
They're all at work, Chairperson. And I also want to say that I don't want to mislead the committee. We've given the report to the committee secretary, and it includes a full disclosure of all matters regarding the investigation.
No, that's fine. So they know they're going to be charged and they're at work?
Yes, they are at work.
So they are players and referees in their matters of their own discipline. It's business as usual.
Chairperson, I would think that...
So you spoke about lapses in the system, but it's you collapsing the system.
Yeah. Chairperson, we would have to think about whether it's appropriate to suspend the person. And usually under these circumstances, we only get given... the basis to suspend a person where they interfere with the investigation
or
disciplinary
here.
Proceedings.
Head of legal here,
the department's head of legal?
I don't think so.
Doesn't it seem odd to you that I chow money and remain at work and everybody investigating me is around me and I'm just part of the system?
Personally,
the case is already compromised. Who's monitoring what they're doing? I mean, I'm not saying surveil them, but I mean, something just, you know, something is hitting the water.
What I could say is that I'll consult the minister today regarding this matter and how we should proceed with it, given your comments.
I'm not a legal fundi. And I'm just from an optics perspective, just looking at process. It's your three biggest funerals, you know, but they're still at work. The minister signs off in December, Jan. It's now March. You want to charge at the end of March. So it's a good 3 months later, 2.5 months later. There's still no charges. Gambon UDG, but mind you're going to consult the minister. It's not a political decision that she must take. This is an administrative decision. We don't encourage interference here. So I'm just think about it. But I find it very odd. DG, Mazambane, you want to add a rider? Okay. Honorable Swartz? Okay, then DG, you can come and then you can move on. Honorable Hadebe, please get ready for the property management trading entity and we'll take us through all your areas. So we will give you, you'll have time. We are doing well.
No, I'm just saying, Chair, for clarity, if the minister signed off in December, already they know that the four officials are in the red. They have done something wrong. So I just want the explanation. If they're saying that legal advised them for these people to be at work, so does it mean that legal is seeing that there's no case according to legal? Because if legal is advising people to say there's no wrongdoing, but them as a department that does investigations have seen wrong, the minister has signed off, but the people are still walking through the doors and reporting to work and getting paid, it's normal. So I just want to know that when legal is advising them that these people must still be at work, based on what? And now in our presence, if they are saying they are going to consult with the minister today, consult on what if the minister signed in December? What must she be consulted on? All I want to know is that it means your legal people are saying that there is nothing wrong.
Yeah. Right? DG? Mamba? DG? Would like a reaction to the commentary I'm making.
All I wanted to say is that the legal provision for matters of this nature is to have a precautionary suspension during the course of investigation in order to prevent interference in the investigation. Once you have a report, because there are timelines, suspension is for a particular period. Once you have a report, you can just charge and discipline them. That's what I wanted to say.
We didn't arrive where we are going. So has a precautionary suspension been effected? And these people are still at work. So as long as you are saying you are perfectly comfortable with that and you don't see any problem, there will be no compromise to the investigation, you've assessed
the merits and demerits. You've looked at it, and you are satisfied that the investigation is not going to be compromised in any way. Then you let's deal with that. Is that the case? And then Honorable Mend, and then Honorable Hadebe, and then Honorable Liz, and then we tie it down on this. UDDG is back. He will be giving his report, unless he's still awaiting info. Awaiting info. Okay, it's fine. Bamba will come to you. Right? Honorable Mende? So we can Lula on this one.
Chair, there are two things. One, the issue of the tree funeral and the discovery of the corruption thereof, which was part of this, was only on the third funeral. These are three different funerals that took place over three different periods. From the first instance, no one saw anything wrong. Second instance, no one saw anything wrong. Third instance, then we are told we are doing something. So on three different occasions, there were no rules in place. There was no costing regulation in place. There was no guiding document as to what can be delivered for a funeral and what should not be delivered for a funeral. CFO says the service provider brought items that were not part of the scope. Who receives the items that are not part of the scope when they have a guiding document on required items of the scope? So on these three different occasions, this thing has been happening. No one saw it coming. And nothing has ever happened to any of those three different people. Or is it the same person who's been receiving these items, receiving these irregular costing invoices? Something is wrong. We're not being told the truth here. It cannot be that it was only discovered on the last funeral. The second thing, Chair, there is no legal department that's above the law itself. The PFMA is a guiding document of the department. Second to that, the department has got its own regulations in terms of finance and procurement. Then there's treasury regulations. A person who breaches all three code of conducts, if you may call them, and the department is aware. Therefore, the minister must charge the DG on Section 86 of the PFMA. You can't have three different guiding documents that are telling you how to handle your finances, yet you still want to go and revert to someone else. And that someone says, no, wait, there's nothing wrong here. Therefore, the DG doesn't know what he's doing. You ought to know, you ought to tell him that this particular person has breached this document. And according to the stipulations of paragraph what, this is not with accordance with the law.
Okay.
Then if someone else comes and tells you, no, everything is fine, those people have done nothing. That means Kukwavula's book, Kongumal
Utat. Okay. Honorable Hadebe, you had your hand up, and then Honorable Liz. Now, then we tie it down on this matter.
No, my take was on this issue of precautionary suspension.
Okay.
And just to caution the House that we, at some point, we can't just willy-nilly suspend people. There are regulations in place.
True.
That says, it guides. For an example, if someone is perceived that he has an ability to interfere with the investigation or threaten witnesses, or he has subordinates that report to him and those are expected to testify against that particular individual by virtue of the position that you are holding, therefore the credibility and the perceived interference is there.
I know for a fact in local government there are such regulations. So in this case, I was expecting the DG to say to us, based on our regulations, those that are still within the employment, we have assessed they are nowhere near threatening witness, interfering with proceedings, hence we did not suspend. But we must not be overexcited by suspending without ticking all the I's and crossing all the T's. That's my caution.
Yeah. All right, Honorable Liz, say Valango.
Just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify, the report was, the investigation report was signed off sometime in December, January. I'm sure you got a specific date. But what we've been told is the disciplinary action hasn't been initiated because further charges are being investigated. So the investigation as a whole continues. There's a particular report that's signed off, but am I right in saying there are other charges that should be added, and therefore the investigation isn't yet complete, which, if that is the case, and I hear what Peggy's saying about the rules of suspension, I absolutely accept that, but it just makes the whole situation of these people being at work even more cloudy.
Yeah. Okay. I think those were generally comments. We'll move on. Minister, just two, three things. This issue of funerals obviously needs a review of sorts. So I would like to hear what advice is the department giving to the presidency on this matter, so that there is better coordination. I mean, one official funeral in KwaZulu-Natal sometime last year was declared on the Friday, and the funeral was on Saturday. So already we are born and just say thinking in. So there's a whole list of protocols that need to be determined in order to plan better, manage finances better, placing caps if necessary on costs and so on. So can we look at? Can I just like to hear your reaction in that regard? I want that report, the one that you are reading. I want to read those names against my list of people who are here. It's just something I want to check about that list. Yeah, because I want to check whether any of the people cited in that list of four are present here today. Because that will highlight for you the extent to which why that is. So if I can get my register as well of people who are here, that will be great. Right, Minister, can we get your concluding remarks on this section, and then Honorable Hadebe, you will be next.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Indeed, you are correct. I have sought a review of the whole funeral system in November last year, with the involvement of an interministerial committee led by the minister in the presidency, Minister Ntembu. I've taken it further to make some recommendations directly to the president, proposing that we put a cap on funerals, considering the corruption that we've seen in that. And I have also put measures in place that when the president declare a state of funeral or an official of funeral, I've asked the officials to inform me immediately. What we have stopped doing, Chairperson, is that where we need to our role is to provide infrastructure at state and official funerals. And normally it is like chairs or a marquee. that we need to procure. We are now doing that procurement ourselves. I've even asked the department to see if we can't buy our own chairs and our own marquees and store it, and we'll save a lot of money. So the review is underway with the interministerial committee. I've also made a suggestion to the president that I think that the donation towards the funeral should go to the families directly. It can help the families with the funeral. And so once we have got a finalization by cabinet on this review, we can certainly come back to the committee. Just concerning the action around the report, I think what the officials failed to tell you is that in June of 2019, the Auditor General wrote to us and instructed us to have an investigation. That's where it started. I then asked the officials to do the investigation. They brought in the services of PricewaterCoopers to assist them, and a report was delivered to the department by the end of November, December 2019. So we have done the investigation. What needs to be done now is that we need to act on those recommendations within the report. What they also didn't mention that I have to put on record here is that, unfortunately, our DG is also implicated in that report. I thought that they were going to mention it, but the way you in terms of acting against the Director General, if you look at Section 86, read together with 38, 39, and 40, and 50 years, the procedure is that as the minister, I can't act against the Director General. I have to refer the matter to the presidency, which I have done in terms of the recommendations contained in that report. Now, the officials lower than the DG then need to be processed in terms of the Labor Relations Act, the Bargaining Council, and all of that. And I think that's where the failure has come. I'm not aware that there was another decision outside of this report that says, no, let us continue to investigate supply chain management, because supply chain management is prescribed in terms of the PMFA. The problem in this department, Chairperson, is that I think it's the only department in the whole of the country where supply chain management is not in the office of the CFO. Supply chain management in this case is sitting in the property management trading entity, completely removed from the CFO. We are now in the process of moving it back to the CFO in terms of the PMFA. So measures to deal with the supply chain problems. We have opened up the tender processes to the public. That is now, they are not implementing it in all the regions. Some regions are doing it. But again, I can't go and check up every tender that the regions actually open it to the public and advise the public where to come. Then we're also now instituting a pilot, Chairperson, to introduce blockchain methodology into supply chain management, because everything is done manually. You know, we have got one big office that's full. They call it pink files. They call it the pink office. That's full of files, all done manually. So now we're going to start a pilot to put our supply chain management on blockchain and to bring some technology in there. Also to assist with reducing the irregular, wasteful, unauthorized expenditure. I do have a monthly meeting with our internal and external audit committee. I must say, I sometimes wonder whether the internal and external committees are playing the role that they are supposed to be playing, because they need to pick up some of these things and to put systems in place. We have also put it as part of the key performance area for all senior managers in the department that in this current financial year, we want to see a clean audit to an unqualified audit. So that is put into the records. And then also just concerning the whole issue of the corruption investigation. There are several cases, and we have requested the SIU to assign two full-time officials that could just deal and process public works cases. In my meeting with them in December, they've agreed to do so. We spend so far, Chairperson, we spend over 550 million that we have paid the SIU. And I was not happy with the performance of the SIU because I want to see prosecutions. People must go to jail. And in the last response to me last week, they have said to me that 15 cases are ready to go to the NPA. Now, also with the NPA, I've also requested the NPA to open up and to review decisions of the of the NPA previously not to prosecute. Because it's so clear the evidence is there why the NPA in the past refused to prosecute, we don't know. But we will also be engaging with the NPA to put some more measures in place that can help us. Lastly, Chairperson, I want to agree with you. Justice delayed is justice denied. We cannot drag out these disciplinary cases for so long. You know, there are some disciplinary cases that started with recommendations from the Public Service Commission. In June of 2019, they are still not completed today. So somewhere we need to review the system of how do we speed up the issue of the disciplinary procedures. And then it gets dragged out only to find that that official will resign at the end of the day. So there's really need for improvement in the system so that we can deliver justice sooner. I thank you.
All right. Colleagues, I want to complicate your life a little bit because I've been handed this report that I asked for, right? Because it was read there. The one that is the minister signed off on. Are there any amendments to this report? Or it's as is? So why would you hand me a report that's got black outlines?
I'm not sure, Chairperson, why that is there.
Well, I'll tell you why. I've been wearing glasses for 23 years now. I started when I was a kid. Yeah. So, I'm 33 in June. I know, Mazam, but the minister has indicated that the DG is implicated. Well, it's his name that's crossed out here. Why? See, I made this point earlier that we know for a fact it happens every single time when we want names that departments and entities will be all over the place trying to protect each other. Now, honestly, like seriously, like guys, why? Like, you know, If there's one thing that just makes my hair stand, it's this kind of thing. I mean, this report came from you there. Like, I asked for it. It was handed over. It moved there. Ms. Shabalala moved from there straight to here. She would not have had a chance to have done this. Honestly speaking, this is unacceptable. Because I've noted you. You know, the issue of why I asked. Are these people still at work? I was very deliberate. See, as you are introduced, I've got names here. One of the officials who's implicated in this report is in this very room. The report has been signed off on. This is your report. And now all of a sudden you want to sort of extend the thing so that this thing goes cold. It's not going to happen. Minister, if this is the final report that you signed off on, we are expecting a progress report within 14 days in terms of how far you have gone with your consultations with the President and so far as the DG is concerned, and when you're going to kickstart process on the investigations of these individuals. We are not going to sit here and allow final reports. Because this is a departmental thing, colleagues. I'll have copies made and sent to you. Can have a look at it. One which is, of course, not going to be, you know, blacked out like this. I could use far stronger language, but for the respect of this committee, I will not do so. But I think it must be very, very clear that we are not going to allow you to play footsie-footsie with disciplinary matters, to protect each other, to protect individuals, and to try and escape accountability and consequences. It's precisely for this reason why the names are very hard to come out. Because you're trying to doctor reports. It baffles me that, I mean, if you had blocked this out in terms of, you would have signed off next to the blocking out that you did to say that, well, that section, but it's not. And in every instance where the DG's name is, it's crossed out. So we've seen this kind of theater before, and you're trying to do something which we have seen before. So we can see right through it the moment you do it, and your body language fails you immediately, and then we know that there's something that's there. So you read four names, you don't read the DG's name. And that's why when I was asking about the issue of people being at work, that's why you had difficulty responding to it. This kind of dishonesty makes me sick to the bottom of my stomach, to say the least. It makes me sick. Honorable Hadebe and Honorable Swartz.
Yeah, no. But, Minister, and the entire team, you sit here, you allow the DG to respond to issues where he's highly, highly conflicted. You don't say a word. DG, you know very well that you are conflicted. You continue to respond to issues of the funeral.
Well, it's fine. DG, you will
I even narrate the stories that could possibly lead to the suspension of those who are perceived to be implicated. You know very well that you are also one of them. But why do you allow people who are conflicted to respond on issues? And later, towards the end, Honorable Minister, you're only telling us that, by the way,
to be fair to the minister, I said she will respond to matters of this section at the end.
I want to understand the logic, because coming here, this issue was part of the report. You could have easily brought to his attention. You cannot be allowed to entertain or speak on this matter. You are conflicted.
Siyadelelwa ngesiZulu. Yeah, Honorable Swart.
Esizwakalayo.
I think, colleagues, we may at some point arrive at suspending this hearing, but we'll see how far we go.
Chair, I think this is very, very...
If you have noted your hand, you will respond.
This is very, very disappointing, because it means that those four officials that are at work, I am now making my own conclusions. I am also not a lawyer or anything, but it means that they are secured because the DG is involved. So now I don't want to believe anything about your policies of people being at work or not at work and proven guilty up until judged or whatever language you want to use. Yes, ipoisa. But it means that the DG was signing off all these things. And the officials were not counting chairs or whatever. But for the two gentlemen who gave the report to the chair now, to sit here and scratch out the DG's name, you guys are really not respecting us. Then when the chairperson asks for the report, you give it to him just like that. And on each page where the DG's name appears, you have scratched out, which means that it is not a mistake. Which means that I don't even believe anything that you'll do in the investigating unit. Chair, I just want to be sure. Is it the investigating unit that gave the chair the report? So we would not even believe anything you say anymore. That is why you are sitting here and saying to the chairperson that you will consult with the minister today. Consult what? Because you guys know what you are doing. As far as I'm concerned, you also need the SIU. Yourselves. Because you sit here, scratch out the teachers' names and report on each page that is there. Which means that you also captured somewhere in the teachers' office. Somewhere along the line. I'm sorry to use the word captured, but I'm a politician. So, nje, you guys, niastelela, anisboni, anisonipi, and when you give us a copy, Chair, you must give us the copy where they've scratched out just as it is. The same report you gave the Chair is the copies that we want. But this is unacceptable, Minister. Very, very unacceptable that people who are the custodian of bringing right into your department do wrong in our presence.
Yeah.
Because it means if they didn't scratch it in Pretoria, they scratched it right here. And that is why I was saying that. Why do you have these people at work when the minister signed off the report in December?
No, it was,
for me,
in fact, it was signed off on the 28th of January 2020.
28th of January. Even if it was signed off yesterday, Minister, those people are not supposed to be walking through the doors of Public Works. But with the information that is in the phone now, and at our disposal that the DG is involved, it means that these people don't have regard anybody as anything in the department, because the head of the department, the person who's driving the train, has given them a free ticket. Any station, they say, beep, we're getting off. He stops when they say drive, because he is also being showed with a gun to his head, the DG, by the same officials who are there. So there's nothing, this investigating, whether you say the SIU or so-and-so is going to come, and the CFO, Nguzwelu Bhlungu, who control a band who are not under you, who are sitting at some
PMT,
but they must report to you. That's why you've got finches, and you've got cleaners who are dangling around people's invoices, because you've got no control over those people. There is somebody sitting there, and so you, we are rubber stamper when a CFO. You CFO are just getting paid for the title. There is somebody else who's really driving the train on the financial matters. It's this whole thing.
All right.
Thank
colleagues,
you.
I'm going to I've noted Honorable Mazamba and Honorable Liz. Let me do this. Let me just put the context for you, colleagues. So this report is an investigation into allegations of irregularities related to the funeral services procured by the department, right? It's that report. DG Faisal, is that you, sir? All right. So you signed off on this report on the 29th of July 2019. And when the minister only signed off on it on the 28th of January 2020, that's 6 months later on its own, insofar as this report is concerned. Now, see, because the markings here, the crossing out here, that's not a copy. So this was a scratch out on a copy. See, I'm just, so colleagues, we've got if both the copies are not readily available. So we do want the unscratched one, and we will keep the scratched one. All right. So I just wanted to put it in that context so that we know where we are, because I just think we will end off with this section, my colleagues, and we'll decide on the way forward. Right. Honorable Lees, Honorable Tolashe, Honorable Mente, Honorable Somya. Right, Mazamban.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just given the information that's now coming out, I really do want, you did ask the question about legal team being present, but I'm now beginning to question whether that really was the background for these delays. We were told initially that it was the legal team who recommended that the disciplinary action be delayed until
end of March.
But it seems that the picture is very different now. And so I would very much like the name of the legal advisor who made this, gave this advice, and for a report, a written report from that legal advisor to this committee, acknowledging that that was the advice and why it was given.
All right, because everybody else is just a very big delegation, but somehow legal is not here. All right, Honorable Tolashe.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much.
I hope are noting these comments and questions.
For me, Honorable Chairperson, it confirms the perception that is there in the public that this is the most corrupt department. I think if the driver is being alleged, I'm not sure what else do you expect to the bottom. However, Chairperson, I hear Minister saying she's now awaiting from the presidency because she doesn't have powers to deal with the DG. I really would want to appeal to your good office to take the matter to the speaker so that we can look around and see what processes can we follow to speed up this. Because with the DG alleged, still sitting in the office, nothing is going to move. Unfortunately, Honorable Minister, there will be no reason for him to even lift his finger in trying to turn things around. We'll sit with the cleaners doing all that we are told to be doing. We'll sit here listening to the DG ebanga echazinga nekwane istory intsomi ngesixoxe fairy tale that in some way is the organogram, somewhere we take those because they are graduates, which is a fair tale. And now we understand why. I got to hear Honorable Hadebe really taking us through, teaching us why we cannot just willy-nilly suspend. Such a good information. Thank you, Honorable Hadebe. However, I didn't hear the DG talking us through on that dynamic, because for where I'm seated, he is the one who's supposed to tell us that story, because he has got that legal responsibility. But he did not finish his story deliberately, Minister.
Yes.
He did not finish his story deliberately, because he knows for a fact that we are recording here. So he can't say that, because it will come back to haunt him. With all your creativity, Minister, unfortunately, with what you are seated before you, you are not getting anywhere anytime soon. Therefore, Chairperson, please get back to the Speaker's office to go and find out how can we assist the process and make sure that everything that is being said in that report is being implemented, like yesterday. Because we can't sit here. We are sitting on taxpayers' money here. And we are discovering huge things that we thought were allegations for quite a long time. And to our surprise, this has all been confirmed. We don't mind that people at the end, there will be investigation and they will be cleared and so on. However, Chairperson, for now, we can't have people who are lashed in those very serious things, because for us dead people, a funeral is something else, Minister, you know. In fact, it is wrong for us to still be talking about those funerals. Because some of those people are world icons. World icons. And we're such as people here who are playing games because they want to get rich quick at the, our people's expense. It's not acceptable. I really want to appeal, Chairperson, to say we must assist the minister. The president must, with the speaker, find a way to fast-track whatever that is there so that the taxpayer can see that you are doing some work. Seated here, we are not just eating and having tea, because that's the perception. That you are just seated here, just eating up. Whilst we are seated with people who for many, many years are being alleged to be involved in corruption, and nothing is being done. Chair, I think the speaker with your office must do something, and please bring that report to us in this kind of a meeting, so that we, whilst we are doing all this, we are being seen to be reporting back to our people, and we are doing something about things that we have picked up that, in fact, have always been allegations, so that we can work with them to say, you were correct to allege.
Yeah.
Now, this is the process that confirms what you were alleging on. Thank you. I'm very disappointed, Honorable Minister. I'm quite disappointed.
Okay.
I really did never expect this to happen during our time. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mente, and then Honorable Samuel will be the last one. Honorable Mahawa, you've got there. Sometimes I miss you, Ngoba. Yeah. All right, Honorable Mente.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to advise on the way forward.
Okay.
Because if we continue, it means we are going to be sourcing wrong information. In fact, we are going to be sourcing a covered information. That's not going to assist us in getting to the bottom of the problems in public works. Minister, there's also Public Service Act, and in Chapter 2, it begins exactly with what you must do on intervention on departments and entities, which you can utilize for yourself to get to the bottom of this situation. But I think, Chair, as a chairperson of this committee, in speeding up the process, like Mam Tolasha said, you must write to the speaker, can we at least attach some time frame that would be not more than 14 days, so that we can also hammer the president's office to deal with reports that are tabled by ministers and not delay in responses? Because if the minister had signed it off December and made recommendations thereof after that immediately, and to date there hasn't been a response, then we have a problem. We are opening this opportunity up for more corruption. But lastly, Chair, we used to invite hawks. I think you must also, from your office, get an information from hawks, because as far as I know, scratching out a name of an individual from a document is a criminal offense. Lying in Parliament is a criminal offense. So we need hawks to assist us in opening cases for people who came to Parliament to lie, deliberately so. And they tried to destroy evidence in order for us to carry out our duties, because for us to work, we need information from them. If they tamper with the information, that's deliberate destroying the evidence so that we are unsuccessful with our duties. So please, those two assignments, Chair, and then we move forward. Then we will continue asking them what happened to the people on irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and any other thing that was outstanding here, because I don't think we're getting legitimate information currently. Thank you.
Honorable Somio. Well, I think the previous two speakers have covered the first area which I wanted to deal with on the basis of credibility of information that we have received so far. The test of that is a document which is at your hands. And therefore, it's very difficult to continue to probe further on matters which are very important for us to assist the department going forward. I've earlier made reference to the Auditor General's report. I'm the chairperson of the Auditor General in South Africa, in this parliament. The Auditor General made some kind of assertions, and in one of those assertions, I quoted paragraph 34 of such assertions, which are somewhat contained in the annual report of the department. The first sentence of that paragraph, that's the first sentence, contains a term which somewhat is telling. You see, that department has been bedeviled by instability, and the causal factor of that instability is detailed thereafter. And so you find the chaotic state of the department if you capture that paragraph. This is contained in the Auditor General's report. And if it is contained in the Auditor General's report, the accounting officer is supposed to act on such appropriately. If then the accounting officer is party to information which is doctored but given to us in Parliament, it means you are made to be accomplice to that kind of a chaotic environment. You see, when we determine any route for the department to take forward, we would be somewhat be coined as party to any failure, any problem that the department might have. And therefore, we ought to disclaim in whatever form what we have gone through before at this instance. Because, you see, in terms of paragraph 11 of the same report of the Auditor General, outlines the responsibility of the accounting officer. If in terms of that outline the responsibility of the accounting officer, we have all this in terms of what is happening in the department, no wonder then that you will still remain with problems of our people. Some of them have to commit suicide because of the problems that they get without being addressed by the concerned department. No. We can't continue like this. We can't continue like this. Of course, something drastic ought to be somewhat taken. Now it leaves out the accounting officer. It leaves the executive authority in a way. In terms of accountability, that if things are like this, you still have the report in front of you, but in terms of that report, you have your senior top official implicated on some of the instances, which are somewhat outlined by the Auditor General. So you are still going to be involved in a very chaotic environment if there is failure to address some of the key areas that the Auditor General has somewhat dealt with here. You know? We're still going to have a problem. contracts, in terms of managing contracts, there's laxity. We've only spoken about 30-day payment. Mm. There's still critical things of managing contracts, billions of rands, which go through the hands and shelves of that department, which are not managed quite appropriately. And we sit in this kind of a situation. Here is one of your senior officers is giving us a report. Now it's a doctored report. It's a doctored report. Doctored report. Because once you hand over a report to the chairperson, which is stressed in a way, but signed, stressed, signed, has absolutely no respect of this committee. This committee is not respected.
All right.
So I think we must deal with
I've
those
noted the
kinds of things.
Someone
you know, we must be able to say we should not be party of such a kind of a situation, because we can't be handed over a report which appears to be in that form. I think, Chair, through your chair, we really need to call upon the minister to find a way of ensuring that we stabilize that. That's a very crucial department for the state to go forward. And I think what the president said lies mainly in this department in a number of things to ensure credibility of the state, credibility of government in its own operations going forward. We still have a number of things to raise in as far as the department is concerned. And Gwazi will be in a detective when I'm afraid.
All right. No, we are going to, I said I noted the hand, we will give the department in, relax. If you need to respond, we will. Then, colleagues, I've noted the proposals, and then we'll narrow it down to a way forward. All right, let me teaching the trial of a good DDG working with the Pangoba report. All right, DDG?
Chairperson, I just want to deal with this issue because I handed over this report, and I want to respond to it with all sincerity. We send the report via email to the committee. There isn't any amendment to the report. It's on the email to the committee. That report you have was taken from my table. That's our working copy. I won't allow my staff to have access to information against the DG. And the report was taken from this table here. It was not handed to the committee as evidence. That has come through to the committee in the email. So there's no intention to mislead. I asked the committee to appreciate that the DG is my supervisor, that I need to deal with information about him in my particular branch with due sensitivity. The report unamended, untempered with was sent to the committee on email.
You know why
it's not our intention.
I don't want to call point of order.
You know why that argument falls short, DDG? Because we wanted to know the people implicated in the report, and you only cited four individuals. But it's not four individuals, it's five.
Chair, with respect.
You can have your hierarchical respect there in the department. Here, here, there's no animal farm here. This is Parliament. And when you gave us the names, you fell short of giving the names properly.
Okay, I must say to you, I gave a note to the minister.
Wait. So that explanation, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't hold water. Doesn't. So I would implore you to not try and venture down that avenue. Even if the document was emailed, the fact that when we asked for names, you didn't give it. Because the DG deferred to you to give responses. He handed over to you to respond. So I would implore you to let's not go down that avenue. But I've noted what you have said, that I note. But I think in the whole, let us let us not. I will check with our staff. I had not seen this report, but if it was emailed, that's fine. But it's still secondary. That's just the issue. Because you could have, in fact, I don't know, go into speculation. The bottom line is that argument is right there in Pretoria. Here, doesn't hold water. Right? I think I withdraw. We still need to move certain to motion process.